The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 14th day of February. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll bring in the former reliever for the New York Mets. Vic Black will join us. Then we'll speak to former defenseman on two-time Stanley Cup-winning Islander teams, Bob Lorimer. Finally, we'll welcome in the former goaltender for the New York Islanders, Evgeny Nabokov, will join us. So sit back and relax and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by and give us a look, then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at SportsTalk1240, and all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest, he made his major league debut with the Pittsburgh Pirates before he was traded to the New York Mets. He's presently a free agent. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Vic Black. Vic, good evening.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Great. Great to have you with us, Vic. How's things going?
It's going very well, and not to forget, a happy Valentine's Day to you.
Same to you, Vic.
Well,
yes.
Smooth on your end.
we went out to dinner, yeah. You know. The basic, meat and potatoes, literally Valentine's Day.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. Well, let's get to you now, Vic. You grew up in Texas. Who are your favorite teams? What players did you root for? Any idols, et cetera?
Bill, growing up in Amarillo, we didn't actually have much affiliated baseball. We had an independent team, the Amarillo Dillas, when I was younger. So Watching sports really wasn't a big thing of mine. I just enjoyed being outside, playing around with the friends and doing that kind of stuff. But Nolan Ryan, always looked up to him. Going into college, loved watching Roy Halladay. Thought he was a master at what he did, especially the backstory. A lot of people don't know. The guy threw really hard coming up in Toronto, and they had to demote him and kind of redo his mechanics, and he reinvented himself. So I think I took a lot of admiration to his process and how he went about doing it. But
sure,
those two guys, just in baseball alone, as people and athletes, they were all around two of the best.
Not bad choices, Vic, not at all. Now, you were selected in the first round, 49th overall in the 2009 Major League Baseball draft by the Pirates. You made your debut for those State College Spikes. We know those guys. They come and play the Cyclones here in Brooklyn. Do you recall anything about your debut?
I do. You talked about the debut in Washington with Pittsburgh, correct?
No.
State College.
Talk about those days.
I do. That's one of the best moments just that summer in general.
Yeah.
Because coming out of DBU, coming out of college, you have this, idea of what professional baseball is going to be, and being selected where I was, there was this even more hope of, this is going to go quick. I'm going to be in the big leagues before I know it. This is the perfect golden road. I know where it's heading. So you get to State College, and great stadium, beautiful city. The countryside was gorgeous, had an awesome host family, good group of guys I was with. Went out, pitching coach Mike Steele, who I think is now at Long Beach State, pitching coach there, great guy, set us up to be successful coming in as our first year. But my first outing, I do believe, was away from State College. And so that was kind of a shock because there's really not any other stadiums. And I didn't go to Brooklyn, didn't get the opportunity. I know. So I didn't get to see the other few that were really nice, but went to Batavia a lot, went to Auburn.
So
it was a shock.
Yeah.
It was like, wait, we just bust 13 hours to Vermont.
Yeah.
I haven't ever done that. And then we go to this field, and we've got to change in a soccer clubhouse on the other side of the soccer field, then walk to the stadium that doesn't have a wall along the side. It's just like, what's gone wrong here?
Yeah.
Where did my plan mess up leaving college and DBU, where I knew what I was going to get in this glorious life of professional baseball, and now I feel like I'm on a backfield somewhere playing sandlot baseball? So
yeah.
But it was great. Debut the full summer. I mean, experiences that I'll remember forever. And it's, of course, the first and most important step out of college is that first season of professional baseball and really finding out if you love it and if you're dedicated to it and if it's something that you can continue to grind through no matter what the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Great way to look at it, Vic. Great way to describe it to the folks who go to see the Brooklyn Cyclones and maybe wondering what's going through the minds of these kids in the New York Penn League. Excellent thoughts all. You started the 2010 season, West Virginia Power. Everybody knows the West Virginia Power, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good old Charles.
Now, you were knocking around the Pirate system, it seemed. You went to Bradenton, which is a beautiful place to play down there. The Altoona Curve, Altoona, Pennsylvania in the Eastern League. How about those days?
Those were really the first days of me solidifying myself as what I wanted to do, where I fit in as a bullpen role, because up until that point I'd kind of struggled with some injuries, had an oblique in my first spring training that set me back.
Mm-hmm.
Then went to West Virginia and struggled right at the bat, then had a slight arm injury that basically kept me out for almost a year until everything kind of resumed to normal. But Altoona was the first opportunity I got to be like a back end guy. Kind of freed me up where I was when I was in college, where I have what I have, you as the hitter stepping in the box, you've got what you've got, and now I'm going to try to beat you, and we'll see who comes out on top. And
mm-hmm.
being a reliever, that's the opportunity that we get. We go into it knowing each other very well, especially with the scouting reports that hitters have on us. And Altoona and I just got to go out and throw, and there wasn't a lot of like, Vicky, you need to do this, Vicky, you need to do this. It's like, hey, go get outs however you need to do it. PJ at the time, Forbes, was our manager, so he allowed me to go out. And if I walked the first two guys, there wasn't a fire in the dugout. There wasn't a phone ringing off the hook. It was like, he's got to learn to do this. This is the time to do it.
Right.
Let him battle through it. So just go out and try to throw as hard as I could and get guys out as quick as possible without giving up runs. And so that really helped set a course, I think, for my desire to be a late-inning guy in the bullpen, and especially kind of that fire and intensity that needs to be reined in but also have a sense of freedom.
Right. Well, you got moved up to Indianapolis, which people know Indianapolis. That's a storied franchise in the great International League. You made your debut with the Pittsburgh Pirates. You're playing under Clint Hurdle. You got some great major league talent around you. Give us your impressions of when you first get to Pittsburgh.
It was such a shock. and the cool thing was is I joined the team in Washington, which was also the same place when I got traded that I joined the Mets, was there in D.C.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and so it was kind of a familiar thing going back. Wasn't a complete shock when you're on a new team right off the bat. But knew a lot of the guys. My first big league camp was that year, so I got to meet the catcher and Russell, and I knew Tony real well, who had been up and down, Sanchez there, and then knew a few of the bullpen guys. But I got called up because Grilly went down.
Okay.
So my throwing partner was Mark Melanson, which – I got nothing but respect for that guy. He's a phenomenal athlete, works hard, and takes care of people better than any person I've seen. I mean, just a phenomenal guy. So to have him grab me off the bat was a real comfort, because that group was older, more experienced. They'd been around. I knew AJ fairly well from spring training. He took care of us young guys really well, stand-up guy. And so to have someone like Mark kind of rein you in and be like, hey, this is what we do. This is how you're going to do this. Outside of that, when you get your chance, go do it. Nothing changes. And being a young guy, that's what we've all heard.
Right.
Hey, when you get to the big leagues, don't change anything. You're there. You got the opportunity because of what you've done. You don't have to do more. But it is near impossible to actually go with that. Because the first thing that tells you is, man, I signed this professional contract so that I could get to this point. I'm here. This is nuts. This is not real. This is more exciting. This is more surreal than even being drafted. So, of course, the intensity is heightened.
Right.
You want to go do more. You want to make sure that the people that gave you the chance, like, understand that you were ready. And so you go out and you press. And I had a few good outings. I had one long one there. I had a three-inning outing against St. Louis, which was one of the coolest series I got to play in yet, because that was when the Pirates that year made the playoffs for the first time, I think, in like 20 or 21 years. And they were on the heels of St. Louis, and we had a five-game series at home. So
okay.
Be able to be a part of that and see that and, like, the fans show up in Pittsburgh, it was just like, man, this is like big league baseball. This is
not too bad.
It,
yeah.
Right?
So, you come to the Mets, Vic. For those who may not recall, Vic was the player to be named later in the trade that the Mets brought Dilson Herrera over to the Pirates for John Buck and Marlon Byrd. Pretty good deal for the Mets at the time. Getting rid of those two veterans for Dilson and Vic. You have a good start with the Mets. You're playing for Terry Collins. Give us your lowdown on Terry as a skipper, Vic.
I think he's a great guy. Very level-headed. To me, having a manager in Major League and professional baseball is far different than your head coach of, like, college or high school. They're involved in the team. They're hanging out with the team. To me, I've always wanted a manager that was there in the dugout, had his assignments for us. And outside of that, the interaction was minimal. Mm-hmm. If he needed something or had an issue or we did, then we went to him or he came to us, which was fantastic because I always knew where I stood. There wasn't like a lingering around of like, did I do okay today? Did I execute that right? Is there something more he wants from me? He was very upfront, very straightforward, would make his rounds during BP, whether on the road or at home, and sit and chat with each guy in the outfield as we went by, just like, how you feeling? You good for this? I like what you did there. Hey, the bullpen's struggled for this week. You guys need to pick it up. Here's where, stuff like that. So he was very verbal. There was never like, man, I think he's upset with us, but he won't say anything.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So we don't know what's going on, but he wasn't that. It was a phenomenal job, and especially right off the bat for him to give me the opportunities there in the 7th, 8th, and then got that save in Cincinnati when Hawk had gone too many days in a row. I mean,
yeah,
it was just the kind of free reins that I needed to embrace that position.
Outstanding. Well, you played at Vegas for the Mets. You also played with the big club. Give us your opinion, Vic. Vic Black with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240 of some of the big guns. Harvey DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats, Wheeler. What was your exposure to them, and what did you think when you first saw these guys wherever you were at the time?
Well, the first thing I remember about DeGrom, we've got the same agency, so I had been told about him prior to coming over and had heard his name, and then Syndergaard, of course, had signed to go to Dallas Baptist where I went to school, but, of course, he didn't attend getting the draft.
Interesting. Interesting, Vic. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'd heard these names. I'd seen some video, but the start of 14 when I went to Vegas, rough spring training, getting to watch Jacob warm up in the bullpen before his first start. And we had Montero there, and we had Noah was there, and so I know these two names, and these are supposed to be the guys, but I'm watching DeGrom warm up, and after the game, I couldn't help but text my agent and be like, Matt, this dude is real. I don't know. I get why they tout Noah the way he is because of his arm. Montero, I haven't seen pitch yet. Trust that it's good. He has great control. I saw some in spring training, but I'm watching DeGrom warm up in the bullpen, and it's just easy repetition on time every time. Emotions aren't shown as good, bad. I'm okay with that. I didn't like that. It was clean execution, and it was something that I was astonished at, especially for someone who I was told had not been pitching for very long.
Yeah.
So to be able to watch that and see now what he's been able to do, there's no surprise.
What do you think, Vic, of the Mejia situation now? I don't know if you know Henry, if you played with him at all. Give us your thoughts on that situation.
I honestly love Henry. I've got nothing bad to say about him. Got to spend most of 14 when I was up there with him. And we had a really tight-knit group in the bullpen. Myself, Familia, Mejia, Evelyn was up there at the time. Torres, of course, who's one of my better buddies. Still talk to him on, like, a daily basis. But, man, it's a tough deal. For such a short time and for it to happen as many times, from what I knew about Henry and from interaction with him for that year and then going into the spring, I didn't sense him to be a guy that would willfully make a choice to do something to cheat the guys around him. So, to me, I still hold out optimism that something went wrong. I don't know, accidentally. I don't know how it works, clearly. But from my understanding of Henry and who he was and a friend to me, there's nothing in my head that says that he did it maliciously. That's just my personal opinion. And I mean, I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but certainly keeping up hopes for him.
Yeah.
That something turns around.
Hopefully. People around here seem to think he'll end up in the independent league because the Long Island Ducks out here seem to appreciate PED abusers. So
I've seen a few things on that.
Yeah, so he may end up locally, Vic. But you were rehabbing most of the 2015 season. Do you feel bad about missing the festivities at Citi Field in 2015, Vic?
Bad is an understatement.
Yeah.
I think there were moments of almost sickness just to not be a part of it because a lot of those guys I knew from playing against in AA and AAA, Wilmer I had seen for so long in minor league baseball, and he got a chance to play with him, and one of the most kind guys I know, works hard, loves baseball, and there's for his teammates, and then to see how Familia just blossomed this year into the role that he was given due to circumstance and other guys not being, it was unbelievable. Right man for the job, phenomenal pitcher, and then the starting rotation and the different stories along the way to add Cespedes and Uribe and all these guys getting these opportunities and to feel like I just there's something missing because I wasn't getting to be a part of it. It was tough.
Yeah.
But on the same side, I couldn't have been happier for them. There was a group that didn't deserve it more. I mean, they worked their butts off. Spring training was tough. I mean, the guys showed up every day finding one thing to get better at, and they did. And they just continued to push and prove people wrong and fought and actually became an overwhelming favorite, not an underdog, which they were. Talent-wise, they were better than some teams.
Yeah, it was a magical time, Vic, definitely.
And, yeah, so exciting.
I can imagine wanting to be a part of that myself. Now, what do you have any plans for this season so far? What are you looking at?
I was looking at a couple things going into December, but right now I'm taking care of an injury that has been a source of some stuff basically since college. I think we had some looked over little mishaps that didn't get diagnosed correctly or some things that were missed or symptoms that weren't seen right, and I finally got a sure footing on what I need to get taken care of, so waiting on that to get done, and then should be 100% by middle of the summer.
Okay.
I know it's going to be a different year for me until that point. I'm going slightly stir crazy right now. But I'll tell you one thing, being in shape and being physically ready for this and mentally ready, I haven't had this kind of time to actually prepare and get everything ready. So I'm excited. This rest didn't come at my perfect time, but I think it came at an opportune time to really reset and get everything back 100% so I can go out and not have the bouncing back and forth anymore, because I think a lot of it wasn't due to me being ready in spring training. I think it was just some nagging injuries that continued to set me back going into spring, and it took too long to get going again. So that stuff taken care of.
We wish you the best, Vic. It's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to be with us.
No, absolutely, Bill. I really appreciate you reaching out. This was an honor, as was getting to play there.
No worries. You take care, Vic, and we'll see you down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill.
Vic Black, folks. Well, up next, we'll talk to the Stanley Cup defenseman for the New York Islanders, Bob Lorimer, on Sports Talk 1240. Stick around, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on GBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through this Sunday night. Hope you're having a good weekend. Frigid one here on Long Island, but it's not as cold as where we're going to speak to our next guest. And he started his National Hockey League career with the Islanders in 1976. He also played for the Devils and the Colorado Rockies. He retired after the 86 season, and of course we know he won two Stanley Cups with the Islanders in 80 and 81. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight Bob Lorimer. Bob, good evening.
Oh, hi, Bill. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you with us, Bob. Just wondering about, right off the bat, we'll talk about Al Arbour. Fellow defenseman, were you able to get from Al during your time with the Islanders?
You know, Bill, I was so lucky to have Al as the coach of the Islanders because he had a similar style to the way I played. And so it made it easier for me, for him to see the skill set that I had. I didn't handle the puck very well, but I was very good defensively. Al was the same way, and he could understand that being a valuable skill set for the team. So I was just so fortunate that he was the coach of the team, and obviously he was a great coach.
Now, pretty much, Bob, the way I understood it and remember it back then, you pretty much stayed back on the blue line and let the Potvins of the world take over and bring the puck up.
Yeah, well, an interesting story, Bill. I remember one game. I didn't score very many goals or points during my career, but I remember one game I had a goal, I think, and two assists.
Okay.
And so after the game, all the reporters around my stall, it didn't happen very often, obviously, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And so once all the reporters left, Al comes up to me and says, Bob, can you come to my office? I want to speak to you. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. I go into his office thinking Al's going to say great game or something. And first thing he says to me, he says, Bob, what the heck were you doing tonight? I said, what do you mean? I only got a goal and two assists.
Yeah.
He goes, that's not your job. He says, next game, I don't want you going over center.
Oh,
so,
man.
That was Al. He wanted to know exactly what he could get out of each player and, you know, to just do what you could do and don't try to do what you were not very good at doing.
Similar stories, definitely, Bob. Similar stories I got from Kenny Morrow, from Jean Potvin, about Al calling guys into his office. The players not really know what to expect and have Al chew them out and really get on their back about their role.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was so good at defining the various roles because obviously we had such a skilled team. He wanted to know exactly what he could get consistently from each player every night. And so he wanted you to stick to what you're good at.
Now, after a while, he changed his focus, Bob, from the regular season record and the way the team played during the regular season to the playoffs.
Yeah, obviously, you know, after some of the failures that we've had in the playoffs leading up to the first cup, you know, Al rode us pretty hard during the regular season, but I think after a while I realized that it really didn't matter as long as you got in and were playing well at the right time, that was the most important thing.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously, you know, when we finally broke through, that was a long streak of winning a lot of series. You know, unfortunately, I was only there for two of the cups, but that was a tremendous run by those guys.
Heck of a run, yeah. Now, before the playoffs that first year, Bill Torrey, the architect, the bow tie, makes the difficult decision and sends Billy Harris and Dave Lewis to the L.A. Kings for Butchie Goring. Now, just as much as Gary Carter was brought to the Mets and was described as the final piece of the puzzle for that club, Butchie's arrival with the Islanders is often called the final piece of the puzzle on the way to the Cup. Talk a little bit about Butchie Goring and the way he took the pressure off the first line, who at that time, I believe, was Mike Bossy, Trotz, and Gillies.
Yeah, no question. I think that was their Achilles heel, I think, the fact that most of our scoring was on one line, and we had some support scoring, but not consistent enough. And obviously Bill Torrey could recognize that, and he went after Butchie, and he couldn't have gone after a better player, because not only was Butchie skilled offensively, he was a great defensive player. And, you know, he's probably the prototypical second-line center. Good scoring, great guy in the dressing room, a great penalty killer, and really good defensively as well. And he, again, as you mentioned, Bill, he really took the pressure off Trotz's line, and that really helps you in the playoffs because they just can't focus on one line.
Definitely, and we're still enjoying him on TV down here, Bob. He does a great job. In the semifinals of that season, the Islanders faced Buffalo. They finished second overall in the NHL standings, won the first two games in Buffalo on Bobby Nystrom's goal in double overtime. Nystrom with the heroics there. Talk a little bit about the series against the Philly Flyers, that first Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, that was the year that Philly had, I think, that tremendous run. I think they were 35 games or 34 games unbeaten.
You're right. They went 25-0-10, Bob.
Yeah, just a tremendous run. They had a really good veteran team, very good forwards. And so we knew we were in for a tough series. But we also had some confidence in our team. You know, we played the Bruins earlier in the playoffs on a very, very difficult series, very physical series. Then turned around and played Buffalo, which was a completely different series where you really had to focus on their skill players. And then the Flyers were really a combination of both. They had a lot of toughness on their team, but also had a lot of skilled guys as well. So we knew we were in for a heck of a series.
Definitely. Now, game one, the Islanders take 4-3 on Potvin's power play goal in overtime. Leading 3-2, you come home to the Coliseum for game six. Unfortunately, you guys blow a 4-2 lead in the third period, but then Bobby Nystrom comes up big, assisted by Tonelli and Lauren Henning. Where were you when that goal was scored, Bob?
Well, I think as Bobby and I was going in, I was probably halfway over the board.
Okay.
That was the most memorable moment I've ever had in my hockey career. That was like a huge burden was lifted off your shoulders when that goal went in. And you know, it was interesting, Bill, in the second period, I think we're at the end of the second period, we're up 4-2. So we're sitting in the dressing room thinking 20 minutes and we got the cup. And then we come out and don't play very well in the first 10 minutes of the third period. And the Flyers score two quick goals to tie it up. And we're life and death just to get it to overtime.
Yeah.
So I think once we got it into overtime, then we calmed down a little bit and played much better because we didn't want to go back to Philly for that seventh game. But when Bobby put that in the net with that overtime goal, that was like the huge burden was lifted off the entire team. And
I can imagine. Oh, yeah.
Celebrated.
That was what the Coliseum was made of in those days, is memories like that. Now,
absolutely.
The Islanders' sixth overtime victory of the playoffs, Brian Trotz won the Conn Smythe Trophy as well as the MVP. You could see now, Bob, and we're speaking with Bob Lorimer tonight on Sports Talk 1240, that Bill Torrey's vision of building through the draft was turning out very well.
Absolutely. You just look at the number of players that they picked up. That, you know, obviously the first round picks were tremendous players. You know Dennis being the cornerstone in the same draft that I was in. You know, I was a ninth round pick, and not too many ninth rounders actually make it and win a Stanley Cup. But you know, we had Dave Lewis also. I think the third round pick in that draft, and Stefan Pearson I think was maybe a 10th or an 11th round pick. So
uh-huh.
There's a number of guys that came later in the draft that were key members of those cup-winning teams.
Now, people may not realize, Bob, that was the first time there were Europeans named on the Stanley Cup with Stefan Pearson and Andy Kaller.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I still think during that run, Stefan Pearson was probably the most underrated player on that team. I thought he was a tremendous player.
Excellent. Well, the next season sees the Islanders dominate again. Mike Bossy comes along and only scores 50 goals in 50 games and defeat the North Stars to win the Stanley Cup. Butch Goring takes Conn Smythe. But more importantly, Bob, during this time, the chant of 1940 is developed by the fans in the Coliseum during that Rangers series. And tell us a little bit about your time with the rivalry with the Rangers while you were with the Islanders.
Well, it was interesting. I think one of the first games I played in the Nassau Coliseum where you played the Rangers, I was taken aback a little bit because half the stands were filled with Ranger fans.
Yeah.
But as we started to win cups, then the Coliseum was dominated by obviously Islander fans. But it was always lots of fun to play in Madison Square. You know, we used to get a police escort out of the out of the arena. I think they used to stop at every intersection to the bridge to Long Island, and so we could go straight through. But it was always lots of fun, great atmosphere. You know, great fans. You knew it was going to be a difficult game every time you played, but that atmosphere would just lift all the guys.
Certainly, certainly unique, Bob. Definitely, we got Bob Lorimer with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Let's talk about some of those guys that you played with on those great Islander teams. How about Billy Smith, the money goalie?
Yeah, Smitty was a battler, obviously. Billy, you just loved playing for Billy because he never gave up on a play. He just would never, ever give in. And it was funny, too, with, you know, Billy didn't take a backseat to anybody, but he would fight his own battles. He would say,
yeah,
you know, you don't have to step in for me. You know, I can take care of myself. And he'd always say, they have to get through the coho before they get to me. And he used the coho pretty good.
Yeah, he certainly did. For folks who don't know what we're talking about, that's the goalie stick. And Billy certainly used that effectively in more ways than one. Now, one guy who's not in the Hall of Fame, Bob, who was really Mr. Islander through and through, is Bobby Nystrom.
Absolutely. And, you know, Bobby's value is for a team is worth more than the points he puts up. Bobby was a tremendously underrated player as well on that team.
About the move to Brooklyn.
Well, you know, it's probably inevitable once a new arena deal couldn't be structured. You know, they got a good young team. I think they're up and coming, and I think and that can do nothing but help them moving forward. But I think we have to be a little patient in these initial years till they do build up that different fan base.
Good point, Bob, because, yeah, it is tough for a lot of the folks out here to make it into Brooklyn with the Long Island Railroad. And in the winter, it's tough standing on the platform. But you're right. Only time will tell if the move takes effect in a good way or not. What are you working on these days, Bob?
Well, I've been working actually the last 30 years in the money management business. I work for a company called Fiera Capital. We're an institutional money manager in Toronto. Like it very much, and been quite successful over the last 30 years in this business.
You have, and you've been remembered by the fans out here on Long Island as well as an integral part of the two Stanley Cup teams, Bob. It's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. I appreciate you taking the time out of your Sunday evening to be with us.
Okay, Bill, great. Anytime.
You take care, Bob. Bob Lorimer, folks. Next up, we'll talk to former New York Islanders netminder Evgeny Nabokov on Sports Talk 1240. Stay with us.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever considered hosting your own radio program right here on WGBB? Well, why not give it a try? We have the means and the know-how to get you started. Just pick up the phone and give us a call at 1-516-623-1240. We have a half an hour and an hour available right here on WGBB. Give us a call at 1-516-623-1240 and ask for Jeff or Trevor. We certainly will work with you, and in the means of your budget, give us a call, 1-516-623-1240. All right, and ask for Jeff or Trevor, right here on WGBB, the station that serves your community.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this frigid Sunday evening here on Long Island. I hope you had a good weekend, and I thank you for joining us, and I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. Well, my first guest in his first nine seasons in the NHL, all with San Jose Sharks, he became the team leader in every goaltending category, including games played, wins, and shutouts. He later played, of course, for the New York Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. At his retirement, he had the 18th most all-time NHL regular season wins. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Evgeny Nabokov. Evgeny, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys?
Great to have you with us tonight. I guess the weather's a little better out in California than it is here.
I guess, yeah, a little bit more sun.
Yeah, thank goodness for you. Well, you were drafted 219th overall in the ninth round by San Jose, and San Jose had never seen you play. They were more interested in the in your dad, who was a professional goaltender in Kazakhstan. He was known as the Russian Wall. Talk a little bit about that, Evgeny.
My dad was playing for my home city, hometown, for 15 years, and he retired at the age of 34.
Okay.
And he was well respected goalie in our hometown, so that's his resume. So he was really good.
Excellent. Well, look ahead to January 19th of 2000 in that season. You started your first NHL game against the Avalanche and, of course, Patrick Roy. You stopped all 39 shots you faced. It was a 0-0 tie. In your first three appearances, you stopped all but one of your first 58 shots. One goal was allowed when Mr. Stefan Matteau, who is our Ranger buddy, scored on an empty net while you were skating to the bench. You remember that?
Yes, I do. I do remember that. It was something else. I was the referee called a penalty, and uh-huh. It was a delay penalty, and I was coming to the bench, and Steph tried to pass it to the D, but our defenseman wasn't there, and the puck trickled in right in our net. So It was a pretty interesting moment.
One of those things. That's about all you can say, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's how you get unlucky.
Exactly. Well, you became the starting goaltender in San Jose. They gave it to you instead of Mika. And he was considered the future goaltending star of the team. You went on to win the Calder Trophy that year as the Rookie of the Year. Talk a little bit about your rookie season in San Jose, Evgeny.
Well, we started the season, and Steve Shields was the number one goalie, and he got injured in, I think, second game of the season. He sprained his ankle, and I got the call. And Daryl Sutter was the head coach of our team, and I got the call, and I started playing, and he trusted me, and we were winning the game. We had a pretty good team, and that was fun fun time to become a number one, and I was dreaming about that, and that was my goal, to become a number one goal in NHL, and I got the chance, and I was able to become a number one goal in that that year.
Definitely, yeah, and you did a great job. You won Rookie of the Year. You played in the All-Star game. Now, you were the first goalie to score a power play goal.
Yeah, that was pretty pretty funny story, because we were in Vancouver, and the score, I don't remember exactly the score, but I think it was 5-3 or something like that, and with 2-3 minutes left, and we got the power play, and they dumped the puck out, and I stopped the puck for Brett Stewart, but for some reason he just skated by, and so I had no idea what to do with that. I just tried to go as high as possible to get out of our zone, and got kind of lucky and hit the net, and then I tried probably 3 or 4 other times during my career, and I never could get close to it.
But you hit that one. Yeah, that was certainly a memorable day. Now, in 2002-2003, you held out for a while. You refused to sign the contract from San Jose, but you struggled a little bit. And very interestingly, what I found is that you decided you'd never do that again.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, when you're young and you, I guess you couldn't come up with the numbers, and the team trying to do what they have to do, and you trying to do what you have to do, which is get a better contract, and we decide to do it. And you know, I'm not sure if I would do it again, if I would go back, or I would advise my son to do it. But you know, I'm not even want to try to think what may happen if Keeper would have a hell of a first 5 or 10 games. I probably would never see the NHL again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good
thought, yeah. And some good observations on your point there. We're speaking with Evgeny Nabokov tonight on Sports Talk 1240. You mentioned you played for the great Daryl Sutter. Give us a little insight on what it was like to be on the team with Daryl.
Well, he was very straightforward guy. Actually, I really, really liked it playing under him, because he reminded me of my father a lot. Very straightforward, very strict. But you can understand exactly what he wants from you. And he told us pretty simple. He called us a couple times in the office, me and Schulze, and he said, if you guys are not going to make saves, we're going to find somebody else who's going to make saves. And so
yeah,
the message was pretty clear, and we just got back to work.
Sure, yeah, straightforward guy. He seems that way with the Kings, and he's done a tremendous job there as well.
Yeah.
Now, you played your second career NHL All-Star game on January 27th of 08. You stopped all 8 shots that came at you. That's the first time since Hobby Bulin did that in 2002. Did you enjoy playing your times in the All-Star games?
Yes, I did. First time when I played in Colorado was kind of everything new, and I'm not sure if I really enjoyed it because I didn't know anybody. Everything was so new to me.
Yeah.
So I was trying just to fit in, but the second time I was more comfortable. I was more relaxed. Yeah, it was more fun, and you know, my buddy Ilya Kovalchuk was playing on that that year.
Exactly right, Kovalchuk. Yeah.
Yeah.
You stopped both of his shots during the last minute of the second period, and that's what people remember.
We had some fun together.
Looking forward to Game 6 of the 2008 playoffs in the Western Conference semifinals, Evgeny. You made what's been called one of the best glove saves in many, many years when you saved a shot off the stick of Brad Riches of the Dallas Stars. Do you remember that, and can you describe it for us?
Yeah, I do. I think it was the game where we played three overtime.
And, that was it, exactly.
Yeah, and it was, actually we lost that game, unfortunately, in the fourth overtime, third overtime, I'm not sure, but we lost that game.
Four overtimes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a power play goal, if I remember it, and Brendan Morrow scored that goal. But on that save, I just, you know, my instincts, I knew that somebody was there on the far side, and I just tried to get there quick as possible and get my glove on, and kind of got a little bit lucky, but you know, at that time it was a big save, and you know, I was hoping that we can win it, because if we would win that game, the score would be 3-3 in the series and we would go back home to play the game 7, but unfortunately we never made it.
Right. Now, you're unfortunately a victim of the cap, it seemed, in San Jose. You played a lot of good years there. How did you feel about leaving San Jose in such a fashion as that?
Well, to be honest with you, after 10 years in San Jose, all that I have is a great memory. And we had a lot of opportunities. Doug Wilson did a great job by building a great team. And Dean Lombardi, actually, he started it, and then Doug was continuing to do a great job. And I think for, 5 or 6 years, we're probably legit contenders.
Yeah.
All what I have to say is, great organizations and great memories with the great players.
Excellent. Now, we're talking to Evgeny Nabokov tonight on Sports Talk 1240. You came to New York. You first refused to report to the Islanders. Talk to us about that.
Well, to be honest with you, it was such a drama about, you know, that I refused and I did this or
it
that.
It was, exactly, but, yeah.
But to me, it was pretty easy decision, because I came back from Russia in December, you know, I tried to find a team in NHL, and certain things fell through. Certain teams I was negotiating with eventually didn't work out. And then I signed, I think it was end of the January, beginning of the February, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even in middle of February. I don't remember. Right before the deadline. So I signed a contract with Detroit, and we had a plan that, you know, they will give me 2-3 weeks to get ready and hopefully help them in the playoffs and stuff. And then, our concerns were, what if I have to clear the waivers, if somebody will get it? And we were hoping that nobody will claim me. And then, Snowy claimed me. And,
right.
You know, that's how I become the Islander. And as far as I remember, the situation was that all the New York guys, goalies, were injured. And he wanted me to step in, but I haven't skated in a month. So from my standpoint, I needed time to prepare to be 100%, because to play in the NHL, you can't go 70% or 80% ready.
Right.
You as a goalie, you don't have a time. Like, players can go and play 5-10 minutes and get into the game. As a goalie, you can't. You can't play half of the period and then say, oh, I want to change, I'm tired.
Right.
Had to be ready, and I was just afraid of that. If I will get injured or I'm not going to have good games, the next year I will be without a contract. And I told Snowy right away, I will come next year when I will be 100% ready, when I will go through the training camp, I will be ready. But I'm not going to come and just to be a guy that you just want me to play for a month and be gone.
Right.
So, and from my standpoint, it was an easy decision. So, but I know that a lot of people didn't believe because of the Islanders, and they didn't have, you know, that great of a name back then. Mm-hmm. And but to me, it was nothing to do with the Islanders, because I respected every single team in NHL, and that's what I told Snowy when I met with him.
Excellent. Great to clear that up, Evgeny. That was good. That was great. Yeah. Some great points in there. Now, you finally got to the team. You got your number 20. You won the starting goaltender position. Your first win is against the Rangers. Talk about the rivalry with the Rangers, and if you remember that game, October 15, 2011.
Well, it was pretty funny because I played all my career in West Coast.
Right.
So when I got to the East Coast and everybody started, you know, I hear the media, the guys in the locker room, everybody is talking about the Rangers. But to me, I will be honest with you, to me it was just another team. Rangers is just another team.
Right. Yeah.
But so I didn't really understood what was the big deal about it, and I just tried to play my game. And, you know, I think we won 3-2 that game.
Yeah.
But then, like people were saying in the island, you can lose 5 games in a row, but if you beat the Rangers, you're the hero.
that's exactly right, Evgeny. Yeah, that's what people look forward to is those Ranger Islander games. I tell you, the Islanders at that point, the guys are pretty established now, but they had some great young talent with Tavares and Kyle Okposo, guys like that, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Those guys, even when I came in, you know, you can see the talent. You can see the their professionalism. Johnny is like, I was impressed by him because he is such a professional, you know, and I think he was around 22 years old back then when I joined the Islanders.
Okay.
But he was almost like a 30-year-old guy. He was preparing for the game, and he knew exactly what his routine is, which is pretty rare for the young guys. Usually they all, you know, not as professional, but he was really professional, and Oki was the same way, and just that aura around those guys was so good. I felt really good. They helped me actually, you know, to feel younger when I was around them, and, you know, a bunch of other guys was out there, and Josh Bailey's, and all of those guys, you know, mm-hmm. Matt Martin was a funny guy out there, and I really enjoyed my time out there.
Well, that's great. I was just going to ask you about that. You signed a couple of extensions to stay with the Islanders. How did you feel when they brought Halak and Chad Johnson in? You had to read the writing on the wall that it was the end of your time in New York.
Well, you know, I'm not going to open up all the cards, but I guess, you know, I can't say certain things, but, you know, I was hoping that I would stay, and I guess we didn't agree on the number with Snowy, mm-hmm. and end of the day, I wasn't sure if he really wants me to stay as a number two. So that's why I guess we kind of went different ways, and, you know, it was interesting for me if we will get a little bit better, and I wasn't sure about that either because I was what, 39?
Yeah.
It was right before they got Johnny Boychuk and Letty.
Okay.
And, you know, the 2 months later, when I didn't sign, and then 2 months later, he got the two defensemen, and that's what, you know, pushed them over the edge right now, because those two guys just give them that stability and in the backhand.
They do, exactly. We're talking to Evgeny Nabokov tonight on Sports Talk 1240. How do you feel about the move to Brooklyn? Now, you played at the Coliseum. The place had a lot of history. The team, because of political reasons, doesn't get a new arena. They moved to Brooklyn. How do you feel about that?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure, but I love the atmosphere. I remember those playoff games against the Pittsburgh when I was there, and the atmosphere was absolutely unbelievable. You know, it's almost like the Shark Tank was back in the days. Was really good, and the people, you're walking around the town, the people was drinking, eating. Islanders. You know, it's always about the Islanders. I'm
right.
not sure how the situation now, from what I hear, it's, you know, it's good, but it's not as good as it was in Nazi Coliseum.
Exactly.
Because it was home. It was home.
Right. People are having a little trouble getting there, Ganey. I think they're having trouble drawing right now, but hopefully time will heal that problem. They have a practice facility that's over near the Coliseum at Eisenhower Park, and the players are having a tough time commuting from there to Brooklyn. Did you ever have a situation where your practice facility, maybe in Tampa Bay, it wasn't near the arena and you had to commute?
Yeah, we had in Tampa, we would probably drive 20 to 30 minutes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, but it wasn't that bad, actually, to be honest with you. And we didn't practice a lot at that practice facility. A lot of practices was at the main rink all the time. So
I see, okay.
But still, you know, when you don't have to, like New York is New York. You have traffic 24/7 over there, and
that's for
I
sure.
I think for the families to get to the games and get back from there. But I'm not sure. I'm not there now, so I don't know that. I'm just speculating to be honest with you.
Sure. Okay, well, you're with the San Jose Sharks now. Just give us a little bit of info about your role out there in San Jose.
So I'm on the development side of the young goalies. With the Sharks, who is currently playing with and all other drafted kids who is in the system. So I oversee that part and, you know, go to the Sharks game all the time and try to be involved with the big club too. But to be honest with you, it's just the first year of that learning process. I try to learn the business. I try to understand the business. And Doug Wilson helping me a lot with, you know, with the situation. And it's just, you know, it's home for us. And for
sure.
me, you know, it's as long as I'm in hockey, you know, I'm happy.
You're happy. Great. Well, Evgeny, I tell you, it's been a real pleasure you having it with us tonight. I thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule on your Sunday night to be with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
You take care. Evgeny Nabokov, ladies and gentlemen. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Evgeny Nabokov, Bob Lorimer, and Vic Black, and my engineer, Brian Graves, and most of all, you for joining us. I'll be back with you Sunday evening, March 6th. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB. We'll be right back.